welcome to Into the Garden with Leslie here on News Radio WINA, sponsored by Dos Amigos Landscaping. I'm Leslie Harris, and I'm really happy to have you join us. Our plant of the week is, well, it's several plants of the week, and it has to do with a minor complaint that I was making last week that has been solved. We'll go into that in a minute. And later, after Plant of the Week, we'll be talking with Kelly D. Norris, who's a horticulturist and an author. He's going to talk to us about his latest book and his horticultural ideology. Both are called New Naturalism, and it's a fantastic topic. And lastly, our playlist will include how to play in your garden this week in the Charlottesville area and what might be fun for you to listen to at the same time. So we had more great weather this week, and we finally got some rain. Things were getting very dry there. And did you notice that, you know, if you've been socializing via fire pit, it was not a great time to do it before we finally got our water tables filled up and the soil's moist again now, but not too moist, so you can feel free to walk around and probably not compact the soil. Only 4 more weeks until Historic Garden Week, and if you listened to the show last week, I had a minor sort of worrisome moment. But I really was trying not to worry because, come on, it's just not that big a deal. But I do have a quagmire currently as I record this in my yard, and it's a pretty horrible standing water. Trees have died. The stumps are still there. Nothing's growing. And the neighbor's brand new patio is looming. Yeah, not a great look, but really, first world problem, right? Well, Dos Amigos is coming to the rescue this week, and the plant of the week are the two things that I'm putting into the quagmire to make it good. Well, that the Dos Amigos wonderful guys are putting in to make it good. And so what Matt Berry and I chose are two native plants, because I'm really trying to, if I'm going to put something in my garden now, I'm really trying to have it be native. And so the first one is the not so exciting, but great because we need evergreens in situations where the neighbors, very nice neighbors, but their brand new terrace is looming. So these are going to be Suga canadensis, which are called hemlocks normally. And hemlocks are pretty columnar. They have those tiny little needles. And I do have some older ones in my yard. If you know hemlocks, you might also have heard of the woolly adelgid, which is a it's a bug that really, it actually looks like white wool on the needles of the tree, and it's not great. And some, if you have a really bad infestation of it, a tree won't survive. And that sounds scary, but I am willing to take the risk because my trees do get looked at every year, not sprayed, but looked at every year just in case there is a problem. And there are sprays to combat the woolly adelgid. I do not like to use sprays, but I would if I needed to. The bottom line is that I know that the hemlocks in my yard that are already there get a little bit of it and not too much, so I'm willing to take the chance. So that's the backdrop. And in front of that, on either side of a sweet bay magnolia, which I already have growing there, because now the hemlocks don't want to sit in water, so we're going to kind of berm them up. The sweet bay magnolia or Magnolia virginiana will, and it does, and it's fine. And then on either side of that, I'm putting in the river birch. And so that is Betula nigra. Those guys can grow to 40 to 70 feet high. I don't think that's where we're starting out, but I am getting kind of big ones because I'm cheating and getting kind of big ones. These are wonderful trees. And I think what you would notice most about them and first about them is their incredible exfoliating bark, which is really a beautiful thing to behold, especially in winter. They want to be multi-stemmed, and they look great that way because that's more bark to look at. They are supposed to attract 400 different types of moths and caterpillars to lay their eggs. So that means who knows how many wonderful birds will come in to eat the moths and caterpillars. I don't want to lay a trap for moths and caterpillars. They are welcome to dine as they survive. But I like the circle of life in my garden, and I love the birds. I already have a little tiny Betula nigra. If 40 to 70 feet sounds too tall for you, the one that I have that's making me very happy is called Little King. He's only supposed to get to 15 feet tall. And right now, for me, he's 6 feet tall. Put him in a couple years ago. So those are my plants of the week, the Canadian hemlock and the river birch, two wonderful natives. This is Into the Garden with Leslie on News Radio WINA, kindly delivered by Dos Amigos Landscaping, who also kindly will have delivered my plants this week. I'm very excited. Hey, I'd love to hear from you either on Instagram or via email. On Instagram, I am Leslie Harris LH, and on email, it's lharris@lhgardens.com. Please feel free to send me comments, questions, or corrections. Coming up next, we'll talk with Kelly Norris about new naturalism. Welcome back to Into the Garden with Leslie. I'm Leslie Harris, and we're here with Kelly D. Norris, or maybe just Kelly Norris, but the D, what's the D stand for, Kelly?
David,
okay. I am so excited to have him on the show. He is a dynamic and inspiring speaker who I first listened to a couple weeks ago at the Mid-Atlantic Horticultural Short Course. He was also in Charlottesville last February, and I'm so sad that I missed him. He addressed, maybe some of you heard him, he addressed the Piedmont Landscape Association. He's an award-winning horticulturist, artist. I don't know if you've won awards at artist, but I like your art. Plantsman, author of 4 books, including his last one, The New Naturalism, Designing and Planting in a Resilient, Ecologically Vibrant Home Garden. So welcome. Thank you for joining me.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure to be with you.
I was really sorry to miss you last year in Charlottesville. What did you think? Was that your first visit?
It was my first visit to Charlottesville, and I have to tell you, I was totally charmed by the city, and of course, it's obviously a crucible of rich history and all of that. And so I need to get back to Virginia when travel is a little bit easier. But I did enjoy my time there, and it was a great conference that the Piedmont Landscape Association put on.
Yeah, I heard. I was able to send my crew, and they were very excited. And they were very excited to hear today that I was going to be talking to you. So that's fun. Well, so I want to start with you. I found a quote. There are a lot of quotes about you and from you, but I found one in one of the many articles that have been written about you, and I want to have you comment on it. It is, you said, "I just want more people to plant on the wild side." What do you think of that?
Indeed. Well, it couldn't be truer. I think if you look at the balance of horticulture in the Western world in the last 250 years, it's a little uptight. We've often tried to impression and imprint ourselves on nature more than we've tried to partner with it or run alongside it. And so I think we're starting to, maybe by the necessitation of the climate crisis and the various ecological perils that we are aware of now culturally, I think start to realize that our activities from all the way from agriculture down to horticulture and gardening really could be far more natural by design and in partnership than they have been.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. So I've been a professional horticulturist for a very short time, probably. I mean, you're a much younger person, and yet I was a high school Spanish teacher. That was my first act. So as a gardener who was, it was my avocation, I was all about the neat. And now my business, I have a gardening business, you know, my clients hire me because they want it neat. And yet I'm a little bipolar because in my yard, I'm beginning to change and listen to the people who say, no, just leave it up for winter, leaves our mulch, blah, blah, blah. So what have you seen as a change, and what's the timing on the change you're seeing?
Well, I do think that we are embracing a looser, more natural aesthetic. I think the most important thing that I feel like to great lengths in New Naturalism to espouse is that this isn't just an aesthetic movement. It's not just a style or a look. And I think it's easily to, if you're not on board with it, I think it's easy to pillory it by saying, oh, I don't like that wilder look. This isn't about a look. It's about a way of gardening. It's a strategy. It's an approach. It's deciding to partner with land and its dynamics as opposed to trying to work against it. And so, I think that we can't deny the fact that we are aesthetically motivated creatures. We like color. We like texture. We like these things. And all of those fascinations are as relevant as ever, because we can create spaces that are ecologically vibrant and rich and supportive to the nature of place, and still create gardens that are beautiful and that are romantic and evocative and places we want to live and spend time. So I am all about conjunctions like and both, not either or.
Yes, I like that. This is Leslie Harris with Into the Garden with Leslie, and we're here with Kelly Norris talking about, among other things, his latest book, which is The New Naturalism, Designing and Planting a Resilient, Ecologically Vibrant Home Garden. So the connection of gardening and ecology, it's not either or, it's both.
And it's both.
Yeah, and how do you make that clear or accessible for people who read your book?
Well, I often tell people to you know, take a look out, as I'm doing right here from my studio in cold, snowy Des Moines, Iowa. Take a look out and look at the garden that you have already. And you might be surprised to learn that you're not starting from scratch. That, you know, in fact, we are a part of nature. Nature is around us to some degree. And perhaps our goal here is just simply to increase the volume, is just to turn it up a little bit. And so, you know, look at the situation you find your garden in. Look at its context. You know, cities especially are rather disturbed, novel places that humans have created this environment for ourselves in. But, you know, they're not devoid of life. And so I think one of the things about New Naturalism is just encouraging people to start to pay attention and observe and to be more mindful of the life that is already around us, the bees and the pollinators that we already share space with, and moving our garden towards an average that just includes those creatures and that richness in our everyday gardening life.
But Kelly, can we have those tidy bits still if we want?
Sure. I think the tidiness aspect is, it reveals, you know, I think more about humans than it does about anything else. I always want people to be conscious of the gardening activity. And I worked in public horticulture. I ran a botanical garden for 8 years. I mean, I built a botanical garden basically from scratch. It was a relatively young institution. You know, when you work at a scale like that, the activity that you do in the garden is not about maintenance, because maintenance implies stasis. It's about management. Management is active. It's an engaged process. And there's a lot of traditional gardening, quote unquote, that's fussy for the sake of being fussy. It's not benefiting anything except our psychology and need for control. So I think tidiness is one thing. I think wanting to have a visual order or a legibility is a reasonable thing to have. But, you know, people that feel this some sort of compulsion to go out and clip things and do, like, this sort of like needless activity that just simply forces to rein in plants for some artificial reason. I just ask the question, what are we gaining out of that apart from some reflection of our control? And I recognize too, don't get me wrong, Leslie, that makes some people feel uncomfortable. And that just shows that we've got a lot of ways and a lot of opportunities for how we approach, you know, cultivating a greater nature in our gardens.
Well, changing the aesthetic, I think, is a really good way to put it. But then again, gardening should be a pleasurable pursuit. And therefore, if you didn't want to change it completely, or maybe more easily, you didn't want to change it in every corner of your garden. You know, I love a good prune, Kelly. I can't help myself.
Well, look, there's nothing to be, none of this excludes pruning. I guess I just wish, you know, that the pruning decisions and the activity that you do is directed towards something that ultimately creates value in the context of the landscape. It's an input, not simply an output. That you're actually, it's an investment of time towards a result that accrues some value. You know, the contrast I make between maintenance and management is sort of, you know, when you own a house or you own a building, you maintain a building because your job as a building owner is to mitigate depreciation over the life of the structure. In a landscape, we want to do exactly the opposite. A landscape should appreciate with value over time because it's growing and it's alive. It's not static like a building. But yet, much of what we do in landscape maintenance is maintain landscapes at a level of stasis instead of encouraging the perpetuation of life.
Sometimes there's a little bit of umpiring involved, though, isn't there? I mean,
oh, sure. I mean, gosh, no. This is, you know, the writer and the scholar Henk Gerritsen, who's a Dutch plantsman who had a lot of influence on Piet Oudolf early in his career. You know, called the wildest of gardening efforts an intervention with the wild.
Yeah.
And I think I do all kinds of, you know, good jurisprudence horticulturally in a wilder setting, but it's still with a horizon line in view. It isn't simply because it's the third week in June and, you know, a Tracy DeSabato Oss book, you know, told me that I needed to hack the head off of something before the 4th of July,
I mean, no offense to
Tracy,
yeah,
his books, but, you know, I think some of those things become strictures and less for the sake of what they actually accomplish with respect to plants.
I hear you. This is Into the Garden with Leslie Harris, and we're talking about the New Naturalism, which is the latest book from Kelly Norris. And so happy to have you here. So
I hear you about those, the rules of gardening. And it's just, I've been in a couple garden clubs over the years and really enjoyed them. And I've run into some ladies who would have forgotten more about horticulture than I know, really knowledgeable people. But
sure.
when I found that, gosh, that it wasn't always enjoyable and that there are these rules that they thought you had to follow, I really became a little bit annoyed and backed off. And I love to make mistakes in the garden. I love to experiment
sure.
in the garden.
Well, no, I think, look, good gardening is, all good rules should be broken at least once in the garden, right? Because it's an opportunity to learn and to keep growing. I just would position for people, you know, there's plenty of, there's millions of acres across the planet where plants get on quite beautifully of their own right. And you, in your part of the world, of course, you don't have to go too far to drive into some beautiful wild plant communities in the Appalachians or even in the Piedmont proper and see really fabulous plants, you know, thriving and teeming in response to their environment, where nobody is necessarily hacking off their head in the third week of June to make them look bushy and full. And so it's just sort of interesting because, you know, gardening is really not all that far evolved away from agriculture, and agriculture is a finite game. Our goal in raising a crop is to harvest something. It has a very distinctive beginning and a very distinctive end. Ecological gardening is exactly the opposite. It's an infinite game. The rule of the game isn't to win points or to harvest something or to arrive at a finish line. It's to stay in the game. It's to keep the garden in motion. There's a quote when Marco Polo Stefano, the great gardener who, you know, brought Wave Hill into prominence in the late 20th century up in the Bronx in New York City, when he retired, Robert Dash sort of gave tribute to him in the New York Times by saying that his style was like a jazz pianist's riff, always in root, done once, and never quite the same.
I heard you chatting with Tom Christopher on his wonderful podcast, Growing Greener, and I can't remember if it was you or he who said that it is the slowest evolving performance. Gardening is the slowest. Was that you or was that Tom?
It probably was me. I'm prone to say that from time to time. As a lifelong musician, and of course,
so say it right, because I didn't. What is it?
Said it's not an original quote to me. I don't know who originally said it, but you know, the gardening is the slowest of the performing arts. Yeah. It is. It's much, much more akin to choreography and theater than it ever has been to painting, and which, of course, it's more often compared to painting and two-dimensional arts than it is to three-dimensional arts, when in fact it really is the third dimension of time and change is part of what makes gardening, I think, so interesting, both within a growing season and then between growing seasons as well.
Yeah, I hear you on that. But I just wanted to mention the name of the book one more time, which is The New Naturalism. And I wonder, like, can you briefly address, like, was it written in the time of the pandemic?
I finished it in the time of the pandemic. I started it in the fall of 2019 and finished it in May of 2020. And it was a strange time to be finishing a book. And yet, in so many ways, it maybe is as relevant as ever because of the renewed focus it seems people have taken to their home and their garden and the spaces, you know, that are much closer to us because we're not able to travel maybe as safely or as broadly as we used to for a while yet, at least. And there is maybe a silver lining in all of this strangeness and for that much, if people can discover a little nature in their gardens a little closer to home, I don't think that's such a bad thing.
I agree. This has been such a pleasure speaking to you and listening to you,
Thank
Kelly.
You.
Coming up on Into the Garden with Leslie, we're going to go over this week's playlist, what you could be doing in your garden this week, and some music or maybe a podcast to listen to it as you do.
Welcome back to Into the Garden with Leslie on News Radio WINA. I thought that was a wonderful interview. Besides being a noted horticulturist, Kelly Norris is really gifted with the spoken and the written word. I do recommend his book, and if you ever have the chance to listen to him speak, take the chance. Questions from listeners this week. Well, I think I mostly had questions from the people that I visited in Connecticut, which were my two children, their spouses, and their children. And we talked a lot about gardening because it's been a long winter in Connecticut. Oh, by the way, I turned 60. That's why I went. And we had some fun things going on, such as cleaning up a brand new garden with my daughter and her husband who had just moved into that one. And then my son and his wife have been in theirs for a while, but Their three-year-old daughter is old enough to get interested, so I had brought them up some forget-me-nots and some corydalus, and we planted those, and we also got some hellebores going and some containers, because those are looking good right now. Happy birthday to me. I am now six. Oh, baby. Awesome. I brought out some more indoor plants. And again, you have to be careful about the temperatures, because we will get some more frost, but it's time to get them hardened off. And sometimes I'm very careful about it. And I'm like, okay, you come out and, you know, you sit on the terrace for a few hours and then I'll put you back, because I'm the loving mother who will spoil you just a little bit at a time. But sometimes, some years, depending on how busy I am, I'll look at a day where, okay, we're going to have a cool morning, but well above freezing, and then it'll get warmer and warmer, and look at tonight's temperature. It will not get freezing. And I figured, yeah, that's hours and hours of consecutive hardening off, and tough love, and good luck to you, sir. My indoor plant game is not strong, but I do have a wonderful glassed-in porch that we run heat on in the winter, and when I can keep things alive for the winter, I am so excited, because if they're just like gasping to get out of my care by March or April, and I get them to that finish line of being able to get them back outside to be under the care of Mother Nature, I've won. They've won, and I've won. I'm getting better at it. I think I'd lost very few this year, maybe one, maybe two out of, I don't know, 30 or 40 things that I bring along. I can't tell you that they look great, but they are alive. Let's see. Oh, early perennial division. So those two plants that I took up to Connecticut to share with my kids, Myosotis, which is the forget-me-not. That is a cute little blue flower that's coming along in the next few weeks. And it self-sows a lot in my garden. If you have a friend who has it, just say, ooh, do you mind if I collect some seeds? Just shake the seeds all over your yard, and you should get some. If you have clumps now, go to dig them up, and you may be able to get two or three clumps out of the one big clump. That happens pretty easily. Another one is the phlox subulata. So lots of different phloxes in the world. We'll talk about that one other day. But the earliest one that you probably noticed is the kind of mossy rug-looking thing. And all summer long, you're like, what is that mossy rug-looking thing? But in early spring, it blooms either white or, more exciting, a soft pink, or more exciting still, a hot pink, sometimes a purple. And it is a really good plant. And that's very easy to divide, because it has sort of spreading roots, and you can just grab a hunk and tuck it in someplace. Look for things that have seeded in your garden and move them to where you want them to be. Some things that seed a lot in my garden are larkspur, that my friend Caroline gave me of years ago, and now it's very happy and everywhere. Columbine, which is the aquilegia. I don't have much of the canadensis, which is the real native, but I have some beautiful blue ones, and they self-seed a lot. And then foxglove, digitalis, that's a really good self-seeder. So again, if you have them, spread them about. If you don't have them, find a friend who does and maybe get yourself some seedlings. What to listen to in the garden this week? I listened to Tom Christopher's podcast called Growing Greener. I was tracking Kelly Norris, the guy I interviewed today, and then I heard Tom's interview with him, and it made me get in touch with Kelly. So the goal of his podcast is to make your landscape healthier, more beautiful, more sustainable, and more fun. Total disclosure, Tom would not be mistaken for like Oprah in the interviewing world or for a stand-up comic. It's not the most entertaining, and yet it is very entertaining because he asks excellent questions and he has very interesting guests. So the name of the podcast is Growing Greener, Tom Christopher, and I do recommend it. That was fun. If you have any questions, comments, or corrections, as always, reach out to me on Instagram at Leslie Harris LH or on email at lharris@lhgardens.com. Thanks to our sponsor, Dos Amigos Landscaping, and they did put in those plants. I'm so excited. I named this show Into the Garden with Leslie because I am really into my garden and I want to get you into yours. See you next week.